Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We say things that don't mean anything, but thanks for listening. Yeah.
Why, hello everybody, and welcome to We Say Things, episode 224. Suns fan here with Sindarin. How are you doing?
I'm all right, Shannon. How are you?
Great. Do you have the stream on right now?
I do.
Look at this. Describe what's happening to the audio-only listeners, okay?
Okay. You are moving your microphone stand. You turned. Oh, the camera is following you as you move automatically.
Incredible, isn't it?
Oh, you're making a really stupid face again. Very good. Oh, that's nice, though. That's pretty cool.
Looking at you, Sindarin.
This is awful. Yeah, if you're an audio listener, you should go and check the video on this. You will regret it.
It's good. Good camera. Mm. Thank you to Nikki, the Christmas present that finally works. I don't know why it just started working all of a sudden, but here we are. Thank you also to our beautiful patrons in the In Bruges tier. Thank you to STGC Daniel. Humbled Bookmaker recommends Relic Arena. Thank you. Please do a belch instead of reading this name. I can't belch on command. Mr. I Love
That's
the
just not true.
On command?
Yeah, you can do it.
I mean, I can burp on command. Belch.
Okay.
I mean, that's spur of the moment. It's just a lot of moments that I have. Mr. I Love the NBA segment. I wish Valve ran the NBA so they could lifetime ban this free throw boosting bullshit. Yeah. The refs are pretty bad in the NBA, I won't lie. Pepperballs, T-Coil, Q-Ludes is ready to praise the podcast. Stupid Copilot, Lab Dota, Yatoro does it again. Sindarin, Magdev, Games for Falling Asleep recommends that Sindarin plays and then recommends Project Diablo 2, also that Valve gives marketing, and Disco Farm D.
Yeah, so I've heard about Project Diablo 2, and I have suggested to play it to some friends that play Path of Exile and have played Diablo 4 and stuff, but it didn't really catch on. I don't really think I want to play it on my own. I think for me to enjoy Diablo 2, it needs to be multiplayer. But thanks. It's a good recommendation. I do want to play it. The Mega Pope, Zan Xavier, Nate Thicko, 01, Hamscroats, Yatoro does it again, Sindarin, Shark TM, Janie, Dop, nothing to see here, Yvremont, Ben Broomhead loves the NBA segment, Ben, go back to chasing rats and Key Arena. Wooden Aftertaste, Anonymous, and Reindeer See in Ultraviolet, spotting snow patterns and identifying predators effortlessly, Mr. Niebling. That sounds pretty fucking metal, actually.
Yeah.
Seeing in Ultraviolet.
It's pretty legit.
I'll do that. Yeah, thank you guys for your support, as always, in the In Bruges tier. If you want to be a patron of any tier, you can check out patreon.com/wesaythings.
That's right.
There's
very good.
Different tiers, and this is the highest one.
That's right. It's the most prestigious, of course.
Yes.
Okay, we have a few things to talk about. We could have put this at the end, technically. Whatever. I have a couple of recommends and not recommends, Sindarin.
Mm-hmm.
I do not recommend the movie Napoleon. What a pile of absolute dog shit. I went in having no expectations. I didn't know. I figured it would be maybe okay, actually. I thought it would be okay. Terrible. It felt like every... So this is like a, I don't know, 2 hour, maybe it's 2.5 hours, whatever it is, movie about Napoleon coming to power and all the stuff he did. And it spans over so many years. Every scene, on average, felt like it was 20 to 30 seconds. And that was like a year span. That's how I felt leaving them, or after we finished watching them. Like, the scenes would just be so fast. It's trying to sum up all this bullshit in his life. He He's a very interesting character, and I feel like maybe you just target a certain point of his life and just do it that, I don't know. And the thing, okay, I don't know if you have the same issue with movies. When I'm watching a movie about somebody from France, why does nobody have a French accent? Why is it always fucking British? Like, what? You can't find actors that have French accents? Like, how difficult is that to learn?
I think...
it's ridiculous.
I think the reason they do it this way is that there is a perception that it's going to turn off the audience from wanting to watch the movie.
Okay.
That's my guess. Well, because, like you said, it's easy to find people that can have a French accent. But I'm assuming that's why, is that you want the main characters to be clear and easily understandable.
Right.
And that maybe people just think it sounds annoying if people speak in a foreign accent. So that's my best guess.
Here's the thing. All these movies do it. So at a certain point, I can't say, why did this movie do it? Because they all do it, right? Mm-hmm. So I can forgive that, even though I wish that they would just go with the French accents. The thing that really took me out of it is that Napoleon, aka Joaquin Phoenix, has an American accent. Of all the fucking people, he should be the Frenchest of them all. He's an American accent. And I'm like, can Joaquin Phoenix
be the Frenchest of them all?
Can Joaquin Phoenix,
like, some sort of scale? Binary. French or not, dude. What are you talking
Cinder, about? He's the most French of all because the movie's about him. He's all about France, okay? And then I was thinking, can Joaquin Phoenix not, is he incapable of doing a British accent? And I was like, didn't he do one in Gladiator? And we looked it up. Yes! He did a British accent in Gladiator. So this is an artistic choice to have the main character have this fucking white trash American accent. It was so awful.
It's so he stands out, Shannon. It's so that people can easily identify Napoleon.
It's Napoleon. He stands out anyway. He's the shortest guy in every scene, for God's sake. Good Lord. It was just, that took me out. That pissed me off, actually. And then the movie itself wasn't very good either. So
this is my secret to avoid watching bad movies. You just don't watch movies.
I mean, that's a stupid take.
How about that?
That's a very stupid take. I will recommend a movie called, I'm not saying everybody's going to like this movie, but it's called The Holdovers. I thought it was very well done. Paul Giamatti is in it. It has a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. User audience score of 91%. It's about...
it's very new.
Yeah, it's he just. I think Paul Giamatti just won a Golden Globe, I think it's what it's called, for this. It's about it's almost like a boarding school or something like that. And Paul Giamatti is one of the teachers, and he's supposed to be looking after people, during Christmas break, those that don't have people to, like family to be with or whatever. And he ends up hanging out with this one kid. And it's just, there's no point in me even talking about this. It's extremely well done. Just look at a trailer. I would highly recommend it. This was one of the best movies of the year for me. It's definitely not like other movies I would recommend. I'll say that. But if you think the preview, I think they did a really good job of capturing the, I think it's in the 70s. They did a really good job of making it feel like it was actually in the 70s. So,
is that because he's speaking with a French accent? No, or
he has a regular American accent because they're in America and it makes a lot of sense. I think this movie...
I think he should have a French accent if he's in the US. That would be good.
Were there Oscar nominations yet?
This has 5 Oscar nominations, says here.
Yeah. Paul Giamatti is legit. That's one of my favorite actors. Yeah, the movie's called The Holdovers. Very good. Okay. I know people were asking about this. This will be super quick. I did a sleep study a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Put all this shit on my face and hooked up to my chest and every... I don't know. I was supposed to sleep.
What was the motivation behind this? Was this something you volunteered for, or did you get asked for some reason? Or
yeah, Nikki says that I snore a decent amount. Uh-huh. Of course, part of it is me just getting fatter, and my sleep has been not great. I guess ever since I was a kid, it's always felt like I needed 10 hours, 11 hours plus of sleep to feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
And now that I'm old, I'm realizing that's not normal. And yeah, so I just wanted to get it checked out for sleep apnea and whatnot, because other people in my family have had it. And, you know, sleep apnea, the thing I think about, and this has happened to me a couple times, but it's not like it's a regular thing where I'll wake up in the middle, like something will startle me, or I don't know, like I'll basically stop breathing for a few seconds or however long. And I'll wake up like that, and just taking a big deep breath, and that actually wakes me up because I stop breathing. So anyway, they said it might be a good idea to check it out, and they hooked up all that stuff to me. And it's just all over my body. Like it's like I asked them, "Can I sleep normally? Because I like sleeping on my chest." Like, I know you're not supposed to technically, but it's just I like to. They're like, "Yeah, you can do anything you want." You could barely turn in bed. It was a nice bed, though, I have to say. Very nice bed. And I went in at 8 a.m. to sleep because of my schedule. I'm like, I can't go in at 8 p.m. There's no way I'm sleeping at 8 p.m. I stayed up a few hours longer, went in at 8 a.m., and I slept till like 5 or whatever. And he said that if the sleep apnea was bad enough, that they would come in the middle of the night, wake me up, and then hook me up to a CPAP machine to see how I react to that, but they never did. So it doesn't sound like it's that bad. Anyway, that was a few weeks ago. They have not returned my calls. I don't think they'll get back to me till March. So my guess is they're going to say, yeah, you can have a CPAP if you want. It's a mild case, something like that, which will be disappointing because then I don't have a real fix potentially for my issues.
So they give you a bit of immediate feedback, but then the detailed feedback takes 3 months? Or what's the deal?
The next appointment I could get was in March because they are like mega booked.
Oh, okay. I see.
Like to get the sleep study, I had to wait like 3-4 months to begin with. I don't know why they do this this way. It's awful.
I'm surprised that's that popular.
It's gotten to the point where it's extremely popular because there are a lot of fat people here, Sindarin.
That's fair.
CPAP machines are going to be very important going forward. So yeah, just, you know, if you guys have sleep issues, just probably a good idea to check that shit out earlier than when I am. You're up, Sinner Man.
Yeah, have you heard about Pal World?
Of course.
Okay, I was surprised you didn't write this on there, actually, considering how big of a story it kind of is.
Because I didn't play it or anything, but yeah.
Yeah. So Pal World is this game that's taken basically the world by storm in the last 2 weeks. It came out in early release on January 19th, and I think I played it the first time on January 21st or 20th with Susie. We've been playing just the two of us on our own server. It's essentially a game that is... This is kind of turning into a Sinner and Recommends, which isn't exactly what it was meant to be, but I'm having a lot of fun with it, so I don't mind... suggesting people play it. Think Pokemon meets Valheim meets guns, kind of.
Guns? I don't remember seeing guns.
Yeah, so the way the game works is that you start out on a... You just land on an island, you have basically nothing, and you need to build shelter, and then you need to start catching pals, as they're called in this game. And then you're step-by-step building up your camp, and you can employ the pals to help you work. So they can mine for you, they can cook, they can help constructing things. They need food, they need sleep, they need, you know, like standard stuff essentially, to function. And then you can use them in your active team that you have around with you in the world for fighting or for exploring. So... Essentially, the game has these... It feels very rewarding to progress your camp and to explore and to conquer more and more difficult fights and to find new pals in this game. And I can see why this game is so massively popular. It's kind of crazy, actually. The game came out less than 2 weeks ago, and it's the second most played game on Steam of all time in terms of peak players.
Behind PUBG?
PUBG, yeah. Which I guess followed a similar trend where PUBG came out and it was stupidly popular a few weeks in, right? Yeah. And then it lost popularity. And I think that's going to happen with this game as well, because I don't think this game has massive longevity. I don't know how you're going to, as the devs, keep this interesting for months and months, but not every game needs to be like that, right? If it's fun for 50 hours, if it's fun for 100 hours, that's completely fine. Not every game needs to be played for thousands of hours, like Dota. And I think they priced, if I remember it correctly, I bought this game for 26 euros. So its price is like half of a AAA title, if even, like 40%. So I would say compared to that, it's really good value for money. And I would say if you buy this game, play it with somebody else. Don't play it alone. I think it's way more fun in multiplayer. And the way you can configure it to play privately works very well. And this is early access, actually, officially. But it's been for the most part, surprisingly bug-free and fleshed out. They actually did a very good job with the release. And I think the biggest problem they had was that they were completely overwhelmed with how popular the game got. Like, you're never, ever going to predict that your game makes this big of a splash. So they needed to have, like, some sort of... I think they had some emergency meetings with Epic to get a lot of server capacity. Because, like, oh, shit, our game has 2 million concurrent players. I don't know what you plan for, you know? But yeah, it's a very fun game.
There's some controversy though, right?
Yeah. So I don't know this in a lot of detail. I mean, the first obvious controversy is there copyright issues with Pokemon, right? Where it's like, are some of the systems that they've implemented and the way the Pokemon look and feel and their personalities and stuff, are they too close to Pokemon? Where I would argue personally, no. But I don't know legally how much you can own, to what extent you can own the concept and the likeness of the Pokemon. It's like, let's say Pokemon has a cat Pokemon, right? Meowth. And then this game has a cat Pokemon that looks very differently from Meowth, but it's still... You know, within the scope of things, you're catching this Pokemon in the wild with a sphere, it's called in this game, which is a Pokeball, right? You're catching that, and it has moves that are completely different from Meowth, and it's a different color, and it's a different look, but it's still a cat caught in a ball. There's obviously similarities and inspiration, but I don't know where you draw the line with when is it actually plagiarism or not, right? Mm-hmm. So that's some of the controversies. And then this one I don't know so much about, but I've heard that there are some, I don't know if you've heard this too, about AI-generated assets or something in the game. One I don't know if it's confirmed or if it's just speculation, but...
Yeah, I don't remember. I heard something about that, and I heard something about how some of the models maybe were, like, if you look at the actual polygons, they're very similar, if not identical, to some stuff that... Was it either AI or was Nintendo Pokemon? I don't remember.
Mm.
But yeah, there's...
I haven't... So this is where it gets difficult, right? Let's say the silhouette of a Pokemon and a Pal are almost identical, but everything else about them is very different. It can be hard to tell that it's actually stolen from somewhere, right? Unless you deep dive into it, because... Mm-hmm. Everything else about it looks different, or if not the silhouette, or perhaps a part of it is the same, like if it has the same tail but everything else is different, or it has the same face. I feel like if the face was the same, it would be very recognizable, right?
Yeah.
But it hasn't struck me. I've played this game a decent amount now. I think we've played like 30 to 40 hours, and I haven't had a moment where I'm like, okay, yeah, this is just a blatant copy. So for me, that hasn't triggered, but that doesn't mean it's not the case, right? So I can't sit here in good faith and say, yeah, this game is completely clean, don't worry about it. Mm. But to my knowledge, there hasn't been any... Nintendo has got a shitload of mail about it, obviously, and they've essentially told the community, please stop mailing us, we're looking at it. But to my knowledge, they haven't filed anything,
I think. Right, but I feel like if it's going to get filed...
They want to do it well, obviously. Yeah, it's going to take some time.
It'll take a while. That should be really interesting to see if they do anything, because Nintendo is very trigger happy with that kind of stuff. So
they love their IP very much. I mean, Pokemon is the world's largest IP, right? So it's understandable you want to try to protect it. But yeah.
Yeah, but Nintendo do come off as giant douches, and I think a lot of people are rooting for them to not, for PAL to get away with it if it actually is a thing, or...
I think most of the people that are rooting against Nintendo and stuff like this, or just in general with their, are people that are into esports, right?
That's
true. I think most casual players that just enjoy Nintendo games and have fun with it, I don't think they have any problem. The people that have beef with Nintendo are the ones that were really into Smash, or just like to see people compete in games, and Nintendo effectively just shut it down every time, even though the games are very suitable and fun for
Imagine it, right? If they made Mario Kart for esports, do you know how fucking huge that would be? Not only in the amount of people, but the type of people you bring in. It's like a gateway to the rest of esports titles, you know?
I just genuinely am trying to wrap my head around. This is obviously easy for us when we're in it. I just I flat out just don't fucking understand how it's not good for business. I just don't get it. Like, are you worried that if people start playing your games competitively, that people will be scared of playing them casually and won't buy them? Or, like, I know a lot of the higher-ups at Nintendo are very old, so they might not be as much in touch with the modern games in that sense. And if they have a lot of power about what happens in this, if this is like an executive decision every time and they just shut it down, then I can't imagine there aren't people employed at Nintendo that are kind of pushing or want this, right? Want their games to be competitive? Because
yeah,
I don't know. It seems to work so well for every other game, right? When you get a big esports scene, it's just good for the game. And Nintendo's games would be really good at it. You know, a lot of them would be. So yeah, that one's a mystery to me. I just genuinely don't know. But what can you do?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's Pal World. It's fun. Try it. You should play it with Nikki, maybe. I don't know if it would be a game for you, though, actually.
Yeah, I think we both know it's not a game. I mean, I can appreciate people enjoying games like that, but not for me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I guess first thing on the agenda is we can actually talk about the ESL Birmingham after this topic, since... So BetBoom Dacha Dubai is occurring very soon, and it's going to affect... the podcast for the next few weeks, because I will be going. Talent was already announced, but they never, I think it was on whatever the Russian equivalent of Twitter is. I can't remember. It starts with a V, right?
VK?
Yeah.
I guess.
I didn't see any actual posts about it anywhere else. But anyway, I'm going, and I'll be casting with your boy and my boy by association, Kezu. So, should be fine. I have not been back to Dubai since I was a little kid. That's when, this is how old I am, I don't remember there being skyscrapers or anything there.
Oh,
it was
wow,
fucking desert. So that's going to be a very interesting experience. But, so I'm going to be
are you a five-man crew?
It's very small. It's six, I think.
I just see it. There's a five-man crew listed on Liquipedia, which is you, Kezu, Lacoste, B-Cup, and Nat T, and that's it.
Yeah, the sixth will be, I believe, Jenkins.
I see. Okay. But he wasn't announced. I get that. I think it's better. He's better left unannounced.
Yeah. Well, Effie was announced, but she had an emergency come up, so people are going to be very disappointed.
Oh, so he's a replacement. I see.
Yeah, they're going to be very disappointed to see Jenkins there instead. Anyway,
It looks like the Russian broadcast is quite a lot more fleshed out.
They're
a 13-man crew.
Jenkins was at the last BetBoom tournament. I forget when it was, like last year sometime. And he said it was kind of the same thing. So
yeah.
I don't know what to expect from like a tournament organizer standpoint, but I'm very excited to be in Dubai because, like I said, you know, I get to have shawarma. I can find some nice shawarma places again. That should be nice. But it will affect the stream, the podcast, I'm sure, because I'll be there for 2 weeks. And then, I mean, there's another event coming that's not announced with the talent, but I'll be going to that in some capacity. And there's a week in between these two events. So there's no point in me coming back home. I will be gone for 5 fucking weeks. It's the longest I'll be away.
Damn. Where are you going to go in the week between?
I believe I'm going to visit... We talked, of course, you and me, Sindarin, and you said I could not come to...
is just completely wrong paraphrasing. You
said
about.
You should not come to Denmark. We don't want to see you. I'll be in Estonia. It has very... So Buka is in the area, so I can hang out with him. And the hotels are very cheap.
Wait, somebody who?
Buka.
Oh, he lives in Estonia.
Well, he's all over the place, but he'll be in Estonia during that time.
Oh, I see.
Okay. And I looked at the hotel prices for like really nice hotels under $100 a day. I'm like, wow, that's okay. So yeah, going to be doing a lot of traveling. So I don't know what the schedule for the podcast is going to be like, because I don't know what my setup's going to be. I know that the last 2 weeks, wherever I'm going to be, we will have a computer. So I will be able to stream the podcast,
yeah.
But In Dubai, I probably will not have one. I'm bringing my tablet, which cannot stream. So worst case, we'll just locally record it and upload it. And then same thing when I'm in Estonia, I have no idea what my internet's going to be like or anything like that.
We will keep you guys posted.
Yes.
I guess.
Yes. But yeah, should be a good tournament. I'm excited to see some of these teams for the first time, like OG and their lineup with Ari, Team Falcons.
Pretty packed tournament in general.
Yeah, it's like all tier one teams, so should be a good one.
Just it's a 12-team tournament with Spirit, Liquid, LGD, and BetBoom, Aurora, and Gaming Gladiators, and Extreme Gaming. Those 7 teams were direct invites. And then the qualified teams are OG, VP, Falcons, Nouns, and Azure Ray. So yeah, that's pretty stacked.
Yep.
Speaking of Aurora, probably happy that they got directly invited, because they have been getting clapped in the qualifiers they just played. And if I can move on to ESL Birmingham, that is.
Is that how you actually say it, by the way?
Birmingham?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't say Birmingham. I think that's very American.
It is very.
I think you just say Birmingham.
Birmingham. I feel like that.
I
understand.
Silent.
Okay. I understand saying Birmingham sounds awful, but Birmingham, for an American to say, does sound a bit weird.
Birmingham.
What about Birmingham?
What about Birmingham?
It's in between. Okay. That's what I'm going to go with. Birmingham.
Okay.
Okay.
So, go ahead. The qualifiers for ESL1 Birmingham have concluded just yesterday. I think the final regions completed their qualifiers, and this was a 7-region qualifier stage because ESL has included MENA as its own region. So therefore, we go from 6 to 7. I'll just quickly go over who qualified and what the biggest stories are. So from North America, the qualifying team will be Shopify Rebellion, who, to nobody's surprise, ended up facing Nouns in the finals. And that was a 3-2 where they kept alternating wins. So exciting stuff. But Shopify do qualify over Nouns this time. I believe Nouns qualified over them for BetBoom Dacha. I think Shopify also played that qualifier. So it seems to be quite a bit of rivalry there. The teams are very close, so that's good. South America, the qualified team from there will be Heroic, which is the same org as the Heroic org from DS2, if you're watching that at all, which is a little bit of a weird fit, because Heroic has at least had a fully Danish team in CS2 and was kind of...
My guess, if I had to guess, Sindarin, is that they're dipping their toes.
Yeah, maybe.
One of the cheapest regions would be South America, just to see, and then if they like what they see, maybe they invest more into South America, or they go for...
Yeah.
A big boy European team or something like that next time.
And this was basically the opposite story, kind of, for a 5-game series of the North American one, because instead of alternating games, Boom, who they faced in the finals, Boom has a couple of familiar names, Pakaz and Panda, probably the most recognizable ones for most people, whereas Heroic have K1 and Schofield as probably their 2 most recognizable players from the region. Heroic lost the first 2 games, and then they reverse swept. And these games were relatively fast. There was an average playtime of like 38 minutes for all 5 games. So, congrats to Heroic. They make it out of there. Another region where the top is very close. Then we move on to Europe, where the finals was OG against Tundra. And it feels like OG has been beating Tundra every game recently. But Tundra somehow figured it out, and they won 3-1. And there was a clip of 9 Class in the final game just all chatting, "just better" or something, like a bit of spice. And people were like, "oh no, Seb is going to lose his shit." And he essentially just went out and tweeted, "winners get to talk." You know, he took it in stride. So that was very good to see. I think his attitude has always been that if you're the winner, you get to celebrate. You get to be cocky and show off. So he's always been like that.
I kind of wanted to talk about that a bit. What is your, I mean, this might be a boring talk because we probably have the exact same opinion on it. What do you think about that? Do you think that teams should be penalized for that kind of stuff? Do you like the idea of encouraging it? Do you think it's good for the scene in some ways? I could see kind of both sides a bit.
I think it's really difficult to give a generic answer to that, because I think it can go so far that you should be penalized for it. But I think in Dota, for the most part, it's relatively soft, right? Like, yeah. In the pro scene, some of the shit that happens in physical sports can be way worse than what we're experiencing in Dota. And sometimes the outrage that some fans have about it is honestly a bit surprising to me. I mean, it is, at the end of the day, it is a show. It's entertainment for people watching. That's why the whole scene exists. And stuff like that creates stories. So, I mean, that doesn't mean I personally would go and be a dick in all chat, but I understand why some people do it. And I do think it's good for the game in moderation. Like, there are things you don't say and there's things you don't do. And if you do them, I think you should be penalized. But I can't think of a celebration that crossed the line for me in Dota where I'm like, okay, man, that's just fucked up. You know, that's not okay. Or, you know.
So, yeah, I'm a bit torn on this because, on one hand, like you said, I think it is good for the game to have like these type of rivalries, like passionate players. And if you want to put yourself out there and be cocky and come off as a fucking douchebag, that is more than okay. And I think that's actually good to have that type of thing in Dota, especially when they're, like you said, in other esports, it's much more prevalent. Like CS is way more common for stuff like this to happen, and it makes it so much more juicy in the end. So I can understand that side. On the other side, it really reminds me of the like Lakers fans, which I fucking despise beyond anything else. Because the worst, I think the worst quality in a human being, just from a personal level,
is being a Lakers fan.
Well, of course, but part of being a Lakers fan is winning when everything's rigged to your favor anyway. So that's a little side note, but you win and then you feel the need to brag about it. I think that makes you a fucking douche nozzle, personally. I think it's good for the game to have stuff like that, but I would never be a fan of anybody that's like that. Like, it's just very annoying.
I guess my concern with this is not so much about basketball, but more the... I think if
the analogy
a concern,
stands,
it is that,
Sindarin, all right?
Yeah, it does, because my concern with this is if pro players act like quote unquote douche nozzles, how much that spills over into the average pub game. Because I think, you know, people draw inspiration from different things. And I think there's a very big difference for me in, you know, showmanship. And I don't know if that's the right word, but in this kind of context of, you know, putting on something for show for the fans versus normalizing the behavior in every context in a pub game, right? Where people just start being cocky and toxic for, oh, it's what my idols do, right? You know what I mean? And then it's back to the good old classic, what was that good old ad from the, was it 80s or 90s? This is actually a basketball ad that I know with the one, or maybe it's from the, yeah, I think it's from the 90s probably. The one with, I'm an athlete, raise your own kids. Who was it? Was it Michael Jordan?
Are you talking about the I'm not a role model commercials with Charles Barkley, who was on the Phoenix Suns at that time?
That's right.
Talking about a Suns player in front of me, and you said Michael Jordan. You didn't even quote it correctly, for God's sake.
I paraphrased
Jesus
it, and I got the
Christ.
Essence of it right. Okay.
Can
Look,
you
if
name
you
another
proof
player?
That I don't know basketball. Here you fucking go. I don't care that I got it wrong.
I have talked about basketball so much. I bet our viewers that know nothing about basketball, that have listened to me as you have, can name
they
more
would
basketball
not have
players
known
than
that
you.
Ad was Charles Barkley. They would not have. Known
Maybe
that.
Not, but they could name more players than you. Period. Because they pay attention and they care, Sindarin.
Okay. I don't. There you go.
Jesus Christ. Terrible friend. Just terrible.
I care about you, but I don't care about
first, it's the NBA,
much.
And then you tell me I can't visit you in Denmark. You ban me from the country entirely. Unbelievable. Yeah. All right.
I actually contacted the authorities and I said, if somebody at the border comes with this name, you have to deny them entry.
No. I was expecting.
And they said, yes, master.
Wow. Yeah, that's good to hear. Thank you, Sindarin.
Yeah, all right. So that was not all the regions, because we rudely interrupted me talking about basketball. So that was Western Europe.
Oh, we needed the NBA segment at some point. So
Eastern Europe had two slots, as a matter of fact. I think this was the only region that had two, right? Yeah, I guess Wait, why was that actually? Hang on, I have to quickly take a look here. There's four teams invited from the leaderboard, of which one was BetBoom. I don't actually know why Eastern Europe got two slots. But they did. Okay, I owe you some elaboration on that, but I don't know why. So the Eastern European qualifiers was two qualifying teams. The winner was Spirit. Surprise, surprise. They won the finals, the upper bracket finals, 2-1 against Virtus Pro, who still are looking great, honestly. And then they had to play the lower bracket finals against, I don't know how to say this, I think it's Klimsanec or something like that. And they actually lost 2-1 again. So Virtus Pro twice were one game from qualifying and failed both times. So Klimsanec, most notable player for international audience, is probably Sweden Strong, who played for Na'Vi last season. But yeah, looking at the names, very impressed with them actually qualifying out of this region. I would have not expected that at all, looking at the competition here. But there you go. They're on a bit of a heater. So congrats to them. They're going to be playing in Birmingham in April, May, I think it is. MENA, Falcons do it again. This time it was harder. They beat Quest 3-2 in the grand finals. I guess it should be mentioned in this region because there's so much talk about Nigma Galaxy, and we talked about them on the podcast, the new roster as well. They do seem to be improving after they added FBZ and Matthew. I think they're playing better, but still, they were not good enough to match the level of Quest. Or I should say maybe, because the games were actually pretty long, but they did lose 2-0, but it wasn't like they got rolled like a couple of weeks ago.
There's always like three threads a day about them that are uploaded.
Yeah.
People are obsessed.
I mean, I understand it, right? You have a roster with a couple of TI winners and potentially the biggest star of the game of all time, or two of them even, Miracle and Samael, right? So people have very high standards and expectations for them. So if you're not able to qualify out of the region, then that is already considered a massive failure, and it keeps happening, right? But I will say they're improving, and I do think, given some time, if they stay together, that this team has the potential to start making international tournaments again. But yeah, congrats to Falcons. They went 3-2 against Quest in the final series. Very short games. What's the average play time here? It's like 34 minutes or something. Very quick. The longest game in the grand finals was 45 minutes. So, yep, that's MENA. From China, we had an absolute fucking marathon of a series. I believe this one was captured or covered by MLP and John X Fire, who had a full night of work ahead of them, it turns out, because this one also went five games between Azure and G2IG. But these games, as is tradition in China, were much longer. First game was 83 minutes, and the fourth game was 108.
Jesus.
And the shortest game was 44. So the shortest game of the BO5 finals here was as long as the longest game of the
Western.
Hope
they got paid overtime.
Yeah, I don't know, man. This was crazy. Especially the fourth game was just fucked up, man. But G2IG win 3-2. So unfortunately, my personal favorite in the Chinese scene, Faith Beyond, will not make it. He loses out by one game. He plays for Azure as Bach, the composer, as his nickname. But hopefully next time. And of course, Azure will be in Dubai, so he will get to show off his skill there. And finally, from SEA, this was the whole segue I was actually going for, and then I forgot to follow up on it when I was talking about Aurora being invited to BetBoom Dacha. This team is kind of supposed to, on paper, be the best team in the region in SEA. This is 23 Savage, Armel, Jabs, Q, and Ollie. So the same roster that was Talon last year. And Talon was getting multiple top-tier international finishes, like top threes. But they're just getting owned. They didn't make it past round one. They lost 2-1 to Neon, and then they lost 2-1 to Execration. So they didn't even win a series. Whereas, funnily enough, the winner of the entire region was the new Talon, we were like, I don't know, man. You know, the roster got announced. We're like, you know, these are some up and coming. Like, there's some familiar faces and some up and coming players here. We don't really know how good they're going to be. Talon are definitely getting a cheaper team here. Let's see how it goes.
Well, they got a thread that shit all over them right when it was announced.
Yeah, people were like, oh my God, Talon, you know?
Yeah.
Talon lost in round one to Geek Fam, and then they won everything from the lower bracket on. 2-1 against Mag Indonesia, 2-1 against Bleed, and then they never lost a game again. 2-0 Execration, 2-0 Neon, and 3-0 Geek Fam in the finals. And honestly, it wasn't even close. So, what do you know? Good signing for this, at least. They are going to be in Birmingham, and they're playing really well right now. So, that roster is Akashi, Chuen, WS, Joakim, and Ponyo. Exciting. Curious to see them play on LAN later this year.
In Birmingham.
Yeah. In Birmingham.
Birmingham.
So that's the qualifiers completed for ESL1. I guess the biggest storyline here probably for me is the Talon win, honestly. I think that's the most surprising one overall. The Talon win and the second qualifying team from Eastern Europe in, I already forgot the name because it's so weird, Klimsanic, or however you say it. It's always cool to get new teams and new players on LAN. It's always a cool experience to see them, see how they perform under pressure, just see them on camera. So it'll be fun.
Yeah, and it should be, I would assume, hype crowd. UK is known for having some hype crowds.
Oh, yeah. Ken talked a lot about that last episode.
A lot of drunkards, which would lead to the noise, of course, which is good.
Yeah.
Love to see that.
Well, I just realized your next thing on the agenda, I actually kind of already went over now.
That's right.
Which was the...
Good job.
It was shit talking. OG shit talk, yeah.
We just combined it all. So that wasn't really it was a good segue.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, so next topic for Dota is something that was kind of talked about. We've talked about in the past a bit. There was a tweet from Celery saying, quote, trying to play Dota with my teammate Ace. In the past, we played together on Smurfs. I won't defend Smurfing. It's good that it's banned. Are we allowed to play together outside of tournament games and team practice? Dota 2, please let us play the game together. So I believe this is
Preach.
This is a screenshot of them in queue for at least an hour, I think. I did not blow it up all the way.
Yeah.
So I think most people would agree, including the pros in this case, that the banning of Smurfs is a good thing. So now there needs to be a solution for things of this nature where you can't play with each other. And I know this is a lot of work, Cinderin. Maybe it's not. I don't know. Tough to say. I feel like, and this is something that we've talked about a long time ago, and then just nothing has happened, is an in-house league. So I know that there have been in-house leagues in the past with like third party, like IX Mike made one for a while. And I think
Face It had one.
Right. The issue with that is honestly, there's a lot of issues, but the main one that's going to be the main issue that keeps people away is that people want to increase their actual MMR. Mm-hmm. So having an in-house league built into the Dota client for the Immortals / pass a certain rank or whatever, I think could be extremely valuable, but the problem is it requires Valve, right? But aside from it requiring Valve, do you think that would solve a lot of issues?
Yes, but I think if I were to guess, I think the way Valve would look at that is the amount of work it takes to implement this compared to how many people it benefits is not worth it. Yep. That's probably going to be their angle. And it's kind of hard to argue with that because it probably takes quite a long time to implement this and make it functional. And how many people are going to reap the benefits? Like, let's say it's 1,000, which is even generous, because top 1,000 in Dota, the difference between this thousandth, wow, that's really hard to say, ranked player and the top 10 is enormous. So, but let's just say it's top 1,000 that get to play in this in-house league. 1,000 people in the Dota population is nothing. It's absolutely nothing. So if you're making these very elaborate systems to benefit this few people, I mean, I wish they would do it, because I think it's a really good idea and I think it would be good for the scene. But I think that their perspective on it would be that that's just too much effort for so few people. But if they don't want to do that, I think the very least you can do is maintain the current MMR system you have and implement a way to party queue. The problem was, what they ended up doing a while back was, if you party queue, it would set the average MMR of the party to the highest rated player. So let's say the threshold for how you can even queue together is a gap of, I think, 2,500 is the maximum distance that can be between the highest and the lowest in the party. So you could have a 10,000 player queue with a 7,500 player. And then if you queue together, it would say the party's MMR is 10,000. Now you're queued. This was before Immortal Draft existed. So you were guaranteed to be on the same team when you queued. And you would, on average, probably you should lose MMR, because unless the 7.5k player was actually a smurf, whatever synergy you guys had together would probably on average not cover the 2,500 MMR difference, right? Mm-hmm. That it needs quite a bit to cover that. So the bigger concern with this was how it was being used to boost in lower ratings than Immortal. So if you're allowing 6k to queue with 3.5, then all of a sudden the 6k player will be crushing the games. If it was, okay, let me elaborate here. Originally, I think it was the average. So it just took the average of the two players. Let's say 6K queues was 3.5, you meet 4,750 game. How much the 6K player crushed in that game more than made it up for the 3.5 players' deficits. So that effectively was boosting, where my argument is, in high Immortal, I think it's negligible comparatively if you queue like that. But maybe it's still a concern, and maybe it's still a bigger deal than I think it is. So what they did was just, okay, if you guys want to play together, it's fine, but we're setting the party's MMR to the highest of the player. What this does is, for example, let's say Celery queues with Ace, and Ace has always been playing, or as long as I can remember, has been playing on a smurf, and now he started playing on his main. And his main is rank, I don't know, like rank 1,000, but he's way better than that. Like, Ace is one of the best players in the world. So when they queue together, I believe their MMR in the current system gets set to that of Celery, which is, I think, top 100. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard for the matchmaker to find a game where they are in the same... They're not even guaranteed in the same team. That's what's so stupid about it, right? Then they get in the game and they have to be drafted together. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. After playing this system for a couple of months now, for me, Immortal Draft is kind of a failed experiment. I personally, if I could choose, I would just go back to old Immortal and allow people to party queue and be guaranteed in the same team, and then not have the drafting system we have at all. I don't really think it has proven to be that big of an upgrade. I think what you can do is do the old system where people queue however they want, and then you can select a role even in high Immortal, and then when you get in the game, it's highlighted as preferred role, which is essentially what happens in Immortal Draft now anyway. People get picked based on preferred role, but sometimes there's 10 core players in the same game and somebody has to play support anyway, or vice versa. There are games with like 8 supports and then, you know, somebody has to play core. So just throw them in there, have them choose their preferred role, and then let people figure it out in the teams who plays what. I think that already goes a long way, because the problem in the past was that people didn't have a marked role, and then maybe you didn't inherently instantly agree on roles or figure it out. If it's just visually there, that would already help. But yeah, I agree with this a lot from Celery. I personally would love to party queue more. I think the game is more fun if you're playing with a friend, and we just can't find games. So the way I try to play with Kezu is that we count down and then we queue at the same time and then we hope we get in the same game. And then if we get in the same game, we hope we get in the same team. Right. Like, that's literally how it goes. It's like you're jumping through 3 hoops to hope to play with a friend. I feel like, to me, that's just a massively flawed system to begin with, that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
So But I recognize it's difficult. And again, whatever solution they come up with, this is catered to the few, right? Because to 99% of players, this doesn't matter. But obviously the pros are vocal and they have a lot of following. So hopefully something happens. And but
I know this was part, it's not a, I mean, kind of the same thing on in the terms of like the Smurfs and whatnot. There was another dialogue about how Smurfing makes sense for pros to be able to hide strats, which I don't know if I agree with that take.
This was Grubby's take, right?
Right. And I think it makes sense in other games. I feel like Dota, it does not translate the same way. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, so I think the main analogy that Grubby was drawing was from back in when he was playing pro in Warcraft 3, and he said the pros would play on Smurfs all the time because they needed to hide their strategies for tournaments.
Mm.
The difference in Dota is that, yes, you can to an extent hide part of your pub training regime with like which heroes you're playing the most and what you're best at. But honestly, at the end of the day, almost all of the pro Smurfs are known anyway. So I don't really think there's that much hiding going on. And regardless, the vast majority of actual strategy happens in scrims, and that's behind closed doors. So I personally would way rather do what they did and just level the playing field, say you can't Smurf in pubs, and all of your real strategy happens in pro in scrims. And like, you can inch out a little bit of advantage on knowing the opposing players a little bit better than they know yours from a pub playing hero perspective. But honestly, in the grand scheme of things, I think compared to Warcraft 3, it's negligible. It's like a different order of magnitude. So if you could get access to scrims, that's a different story. That's where it gets really bad. But those are obviously private.
I mean, that's the big brain of Kuroki. Don't play pubs at all. You have no info.
Yeah. Right? I mean, honestly, all of this talk about him, I don't know what account he plays pubs on, but there's no way you play at a high level and don't play pubs at all. It's just not.
Yeah, I took that with a big grain of salt. Like, if that's happening, though, first of all, impressive that you're even remotely functional as a human being in these Dota games, but there's no way that can be a thing, right? I refuse to believe that.
Yeah, I would say if there's any pro player playing at a tier 2 and above level, even tier 3 and above level, and they don't pub, I kind of just don't believe that your teammates would keep playing with you, you know? Yeah,
exactly.
Like, you're not taking it seriously enough. You're not practicing enough. You're not trying hard enough to get better. Because this is a game that is so ever-evolving that you need to constantly have your finger on the pulse, and that's not just with strategy. It's also with the play itself and having naturalness. I'm sure you can agree to this. If you don't play Dota for a week and you play again, it's like, whoa.
Oh, it feels awful, yeah.
Because things just move at that pace, so you might not be up to date with the meta of what people are playing, or you might not be up to date with which items you buy, or you might not be up to date with the flow of the game, and all of those things evolve dynamically all the time. So if you take a break, you need time to recover. If you're playing seriously on a pro level, that's just not a thing. So. All right.
Moving on to our final two topics, which are not Dota related. Apparently Valve made $1 billion from CS cases last year. I wanted to talk about this briefly, and a lot of it came because of CS2, which I believe, and you guys can correct me in the comments if I'm wrong, but I've been playing a lot of CS2. None of the chests in CS2 are new. That's the crazy part to me. I don't believe anything has been added that's new.
That sounds right, probably.
It is all old chests, old shit. They've made $1 billion. And I think this, for gamers, is really bad news. Because, first of all, their entire system, I don't understand how this has become popular. It's crazy. It's literally just gambling that is somehow legal in most countries.
Did you just say, I don't understand how gambling became popular? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, that was pretty stupid.
I
also don't understand why gambling is popular in general. That's just a personal thing, though. Like, I don't get what the draw is, personally. But apparently,
when you know that it's big, it's not surprising that a gambling system will be popular.
That's true. The thing that's crazy, though, is that even compared to the Dota system, that getting anything actually worthwhile, Do you know how much money you have to put into the game to get anything? It's fucking crazy. I don't even think they have like these, the, what are the odds in Dota called again? The
escalating odds?
Yeah, I don't think they have escalating odds of any kind.
CS has the trade-up contract, which is the one that Dota got inspired by their last chest, where 10 of a lower quality gives you one of the higher one. That's where it comes from. It's a CSGO system.
Yeah. So it's, again, I'm going to say this. I've played CS more than most people that have lived, and this is with 10 years of not playing CSGO. I still have played more than most people. I have never purchased a key for... Like, the only time I would spend money on cosmetics in CS is through the marketplace. I just, if I know I want something, I'll pay for it. Fine. Would never open chests. It's literally useless to me. I don't get it. But apparently it's very popular. They made $1 billion. And I think they're just going to double down on the same idea. And I don't know what Dota is making by comparison. Obviously, it's not going to be remotely close because skins are not nearly as cool. Or even just the chests in general just aren't as popular. But it's probably bad news for Dota because they're just going to continue with the same system that they've been using, which if people weren't buying them at all in Dota, then they wouldn't be doing it, but people are. So, and that makes me sad because now I can't open chests. I just get it on the marketplace or some shit.
There's something inherent about skins in CSGO, which is, I think, the fact that you have them every single game.
Yeah.
In Dota, if you have a really cool skin for a hero, you need to play that hero in that specific game. It needs to not be banned, and it needs to not be picked by the other team. And it's a game where your hero isn't always going to be good. In CS, your AK is always going to be good if you're good. And that's probably also why stickers are extremely popular in this game and are absolutely not popular in Dota. And it feels like Valve are really trying to find the sticker equivalent for Dota, like how they can do it. They've tried sprays, they've tried stickers, they've tried voice lines for the teams, they've tried all sorts of stuff. But the numbers that people are reporting in CS for sticker sales are... I can't even put into words how much it's dwarfing what the pro players get in Dota from cosmetics. It's nothing. It was actually very interesting. There was this video I saw a couple of weeks ago. I think Sticko made it. Styko. You've probably heard of him. In CS. And I think he plays for Team Apex, if I'm not mistaken. Let me just make sure. Yes. So he's played for Apex until recently, at least. No, he still plays for them. Okay. He did a breakdown of his earnings, which is very rare. He did it for educational purposes on his YouTube channel. He did a breakdown of the earnings of a pro CS player and did a breakdown of this is how much I made this year. And then there were certain things he couldn't go into full details about how much was from stickers because that was against terms of service. He couldn't disclose I made this much money from stickers. But effectively what he kind of did was he was like, this is what I made from everything else. So
what are the numbers?
So, you know, it's not very difficult to figure it out. And he made I think, if I remember correctly, if you ballparked it, even without taking the exact numbers into account, he probably made between $200,000 to $300,000 in sticker money from Team Apex. Which is why it's such a big deal for these teams to make the majors. It's not even because of the trophy and the chance of winning the title. It's because if you make the major, your year is secured because the stickers just sell fucking crazily well. Dota just doesn't have that equivalent. In Dota, you make the major, great. Now get top three, you know?
Yep, pretty much.
In CS, make the major, you're good to go. So, yeah. That was an eye opener for me because I knew there was a lot of money in it, but I was like, holy shit.
Sindarin, right? We got into the wrong game. Actually, you want to roll back time and get into Counter-Strike with me? We can make millions somehow.
By being pro players?
Well, no. We wouldn't be pro players, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I also believe the talent in CS gets played significantly more, but I also think, you know, they're tournaments just have bigger viewership and bigger sponsorships, so that's just, I guess, a natural part of it, right?
Anyway, back to the chess thing. I think
we can go CS.
My I feel like, and I know there's been some preliminary studies done, there's been some YouTube videos that I've watched. I really wonder if, like, years down the road, we're going to see some hard data to kind of showcase how much harm this kind of a system has mm-hmm. on kids, I guess. Because, again, right. I know I'm an old guy at this point, but it just blows my mind that this is popular. It blows my fucking mind. And I can understand from, like, you know what? Who gives a shit? Who cares what I think? I'm just an old man being cranky. But I feel like this has really damaged it's damaged video games.
You are definitely not the only person who thinks that. My question is, do you think loot boxes as a concept should be banned, or do you think there should be different regulation?
I haven't really given it much thought. I feel like...
The way Dota did chest,
I had no problem with until the key system. I just hate this system because it's literally gambling. That's it. It's like there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, right? Before, you could argue that it's a different form of it, maybe, but it's not literally just gambling. Like, you can see the odds, you can see it escalating, whatever. Now it's literally just RNG. Yeah, you can do your shitty-ass trade-ups. Okay, you still have to spend thousands of dollars to actually make use of it to get something worthwhile, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, the funny thing is, like if I want something in one of these chests, I'm just going to buy it off the marketplace. I'm going to buy it off of somebody that spent thousands of dollars doing it for me. So, in a way, it doesn't really affect me personally because I'll just buy it anyway for what it's probably worth. But I don't imagine how many people like have wasted paychecks or been addicted to this shit. I have fucking no idea.
Yeah. I think for me, the biggest concern with this that you raise is the lack of moderation, right? So that there is no cap and there's no age limit. So I personally think one way to go about this is to... But this is where it gets complicated, right? Because let's say... how do you verify the age of a player on Steam, right? If you want actual verification, so that let's say you're selling this product, and let's just entertain the idea that the EU says to buy loot boxes, you need to be 18, right?
Mm.
How do you do that? How do you enforce that in an online environment? Either you have to have
a Chinese credit system.
You need to have people send in, I mean, essentially you need to have people send in legal documents, right? Mm. You need to have people send a copy of their passport or a copy of the driver's license or whatever to prove their identity, which means that the companies that are offering the service of selling crates or whatever needs to have a division in the company that does ID checks for every user that wants to buy a box. Which you could just say that's their problem. And I kind of would agree with that. It's like, okay, you guys want to make money selling crates? You have to go through the hassle of doing the IDing, just like online gambling sites or poker sites, for example, have to do, where if you make an account and you need to submit an ID to prove your age, then there you go. In a way, it's no different, but in a way, it's very different. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a video game, you're buying a crate, but the problem is there's zero moderation and people can get completely hooked on it. So... I don't know. It's complicated, I think. I don't know if there is an elegant solution to it, but I think the current version is not right, is what I'll say.
And on top of that, for me, from my perspective at least, another reason that them making $1 billion just from this old case in CS2 essentially is going to hurt the game is because there's going to be more complacency from the devs. They're making all this money. The game is in a complete dogshit state. I went on a rant how many weeks ago about how they haven't updated anything. It's still fucking garbage in so many ways. It's like, if I was a dev on this team, I would genuinely be embarrassed with what is out there this many months after release. And it's not in beta or anything like that. Like, it is embarrassing that when I play the game that I've been playing for 20 plus years, part of me is like, man, I wish Valorant just didn't have abilities. Because I would be literally playing that game because it just feels better in every other fucking way. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they've made this much money doing literally nothing, just old shit in a new game, like, I feel like there's a complacency issue. And I would love to eat my words that they've been making some giant update, but I don't think that, I don't know. It's been a long time.
You played CSGO on release, right?
It was terrible then. Yeah, it took them 2 years.
I'm seeing a lot of the comments about CS2 where people are like, this game is shit. Come on, get your shit together, Valve. And people are like, were you not there for CSGO release? It was very bad for a long time, and eventually they came around.
Yep, source as well.
My question is, why does that have to happen every time?
If it
happens for Source, it happened for CSGO, and now it happens for CS2. At some point, you would think you're learning some fundamentals.
Do you think any of the devs that worked on Source are still working on CS? That's the issue.
That's the thing. Like, maybe my perspective on it is just flawed because it's not the same team whatsoever. Everybody has been replaced, so the new people need to make... It's kind of like what Shane said on last episode about organizing events, where the new people need to make mistakes. They need to learn the same way the old crew did, through by going through the fire and just step by step figuring things out. Which, if that is the case, that is a shame, because effectively you're just wasting a ton of manpower that you already had done, and they need to go over the same mistakes again. Now, I understand innovation is going to come at a cost, right? Like, they're trying this sub-tick system stuff, and if you're doing something new, I'll cut you a lot more slack, because, you know, you're trying something, it's bold, it can be very hard to implement new things, I get that. But some of the core elements that you made work in two previous games that you spent months and months and months perfecting, why are they so flawed in the new one? That's what I don't get, you know?
So when Source
came out...
I'm
not a programmer, so I don't fucking know. Like, maybe it's super hard, but...
When Source came out... Yeah. So 1.6 was obviously very popular. Source came out, and it split the community. Some people, like me, just switched because... Honestly, that's what you're used to doing. When a sequel came out at that point, like, it wasn't like before, or it wasn't like recently where a new Call of Duty or a new whatever comes out every fucking year and it's just like rehashed version or whatever. Like, a sequel means, okay, we're moving to that game. So I did that. It took them 2 years to fix hitboxes. Like, the hitboxes were extremely bad. After 2 years, I personally would say the game was better than 1.6, but it was too late at that point. The communities were completely split. Then CSGO comes out. Doesn't really matter how bad it is, because 1.6 is so old at that point. People don't want to stick around with Source. They come out with actual matchmaking. That's what did it. And then gambling, aka chess. That's what killed, or I shouldn't say killed. That's what transitioned people from 1.6 and Source to Go. The game in Go, though, was shit for 2 years, like you said. So many imbalance. The problem is, like, there's so many things. Like, I'm not going to go on this tangent again, Syndrome. This is... opening up a new can of worms. There's a lot of things they can fix that are very easy to fix. I'm not saying the sub-tick system is easy, although turning on 128-tick server is easy. Yes, because that existed for how many years? So technically, it is an easy fix in some ways. But yeah, I read this headline, the $1 billion thing. It blew my mind because it's the old shit, just rehashed stuff, and that it feels like there's not going to be any fire lit under Valve, the team that's working on CS. To make CS2 any better, but maybe in
you'd
a year
like
and a half.
You'd like to think that a decent amount of devs have some pride, right, in the products. At least that's what Valve are. They're priding themselves on putting in a lot of efforts into games and not releasing half-assed shit, which is why their games are delayed a lot of the times, or just gets canceled if they don't like what it is. So they're not making, like, the next Call of Duty 7000, you know? So you can appreciate that, but... And they also don't have external shareholders, so they don't have to meet some sort of, you know, margins to have a successful year. That's up to them internally. I get what you're saying. I think that perspective that the devs are going to get lazy because it's making a lot of money, I do think is a bit different for Valve than other companies. I think I'm a little bit less worried about it from that perspective in general. The question is just, if the game is doing well enough, are Valve going to dedicate enough manpower to it compared to working on new other exciting stuff, right? That's always going to be the internal pull in that company, is that you can go work on something else. So if CS2 is doing fine and you're like, oh, this other thing seems really exciting, like, are you keeping the team? Are they going to keep going through the grind of fixing their stuff if they can just be like, you know, I'll work on this other game?
It's funny how there's so many downsides. Like, you're talking about they don't have shareholders and all that, and it's like, oh, that sounds great, but then there's major cons that come with it as well.
There's pros and cons.
They do whatever they want. Like, that's could be a very bad thing.
I mean, ultimately, Valve, you could, if you want to be really pessimistic about it, Valve could be like, fuck it, we don't care, we have Steam. Like, they could literally just say that and just do nothing forever, you know? Yep. If Steam is maintained, this company is mega profitable. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to make games. I think they do it because they love it and because they think it drives, obviously it's profitable, right? Otherwise, they obviously wouldn't do it, but they aren't necessarily allocating resources where they make the most money, is what I'm saying. Where I feel like other companies are doing that to a bigger extent. Valve is more willing to take risk and spend months and months and months in a game and then not release it, right? Because, oh, it didn't work out the way we thought, or really let people be very creative, but also not necessarily hold them accountable in the same way, if that makes sense. So, I don't know.
All right. Definitely last topic, which we'll make quick, is Microsoft, which acquired Blizzard, I believe, officially, finally, after many, 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 God knows how many months of going back and forth and conceding a bunch of stuff to make sure there wasn't a monopoly or whatever. They have canceled the Blizzard survival game, which I don't know if you guys even remember us talking about this a couple years ago.
Image.
There was a survival game, Untitled, and they've just canceled it because they fired everybody on the team, essentially. And then on top of that, there's more layoffs with the Overwatch and Call of Duty teams. Reportedly, for their esports division of Blizzard, they laid off 60 out of 72 staff members. So according to this tweet, only 12 people remain on the esports side for Blizzard. Your thoughts on all of this?
Blizzard saw how popular Pal World is, and they were like, we should be more like Nintendo. this spawns good games. I don't know. If I were to guess, I think the vast majority of Blizzard employees that were in the esports division were probably an umbrella term for Overwatch, right? That's my guess. So
that's probably true.
I think that's just natural.
Overwatch,
I
mean, obviously, the writing's been on the wall for quite a while for Overwatch.
Yeah, and it's possible that a lot of the people that stayed have stayed for a while kind of were like undefined what their actual tasks necessarily were going forward, and they were maybe in limbo, and then they couldn't figure out what to do, and then ultimately the company doesn't have any point in,
it's funny,
in running
that
division.
I think Overwatch is going to go down as the most forced esport of all time. Can you think of another game?
No.
That's crazy.
I cannot. Also because, like, who else has, like, tried to force an esport that you can think of? It's like, devs might, you know, offer prize pool, set a tournament, try to encourage people to play it professionally and make it fun, but not like make a full-on league with shareholders and teams and whatever. I just think it's unprecedented, right? There's no other game that has really tried that. Am I wrong?
Some people are saying HOTS, which is probably true to a degree. I wouldn't say it's on the same level as Overwatch League. Somebody's saying CS Source because of the CGS tournament, I'm assuming, but that wasn't...
But that wasn't Valve.
Right, that wasn't... Not only was it not Valve, but it wasn't just CS Source either. It was a compilation of games. It was like an Olympics almost. I agree that was forced, but I feel like never on this level. This has been such a huge blunder, and we said it from day one that this was going to happen. It feels like okay, big surprise. So here's the thing that so Microsoft, when we heard about them acquiring Blizzard, we're like, okay, it can't be bad because it couldn't get any worse, surely, for Blizzard on some level.
Pretty much.
And I feel like when companies this large acquire other companies, there's going to be tons of turnover. So on some level, I guess I can understand it. Obviously, I feel bad for people that are losing their jobs. And my guess is that a lot of these positions will become available again with just new hires.
I don't think the esports ones will. That's my guess. I think...
Depends on what games they... I mean, if it was mostly Overwatch, then of course.
I think what it seems to be... Or what I would assume is likely happening at Blizzard is that, and Microsoft obviously, is that you're starting to probably, based on your track record, feel like esports needs to handle itself and we make games. That's my guess. That doesn't mean there's full autonomy, that esports get no support from the devs or whatnot, but that you're likely not trying to run the show and organize it yourself internally, but rather let the ecosystem itself do it, and then offer support where it's useful for you to be a part of it. So I think if they had like 72 employees on the esports division, I don't see how Blizzard can field that now. Like, what would they do? What do those 72 people do? Right?
Play Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you want to have that many people employed for an esports division, you genuinely need to run a league. Otherwise, you can't justify having 72 people working on it. Because, like, what's their job, right? It just doesn't really make sense. So, yeah, I think... I personally think Microsoft won't go down that route, but we'll see. Blizzard, for Blizzard at least, it's hard to say it was a failure, because they probably made bank, right? It's everybody else that's fucked, because we get to have a harder time finding big investors for esports, because they all, the ones that have a lot of money that were like, oh man, this is booming, let's get into Overwatch, they dipped their toes and they were like, wow, this sucks ass. We're not going to put any more money into this.
Yeah.
That's what sucks about this. Whether it was a success for Blizzard or not, don't really care that much personally, but I feel like the ripple effect will be way worse. So yep, that's totally ass. Agree.
Okay, that brings us to the end of this week's episode. Yep. Thank you for watching or listening, everybody. We appreciate you. Like we said, the next few weeks...
TBD on the episodes, right?
Yes, TBD on...
Probably the easiest way to say it.
Everything. Okay.
Maybe record at a different time. We may have to skip a week altogether, depending on your availability primarily, right?
Yes.
We'll figure it out.
I think week 4 and 5... should be relatively easy to do.
Okay.
But the next 3 weeks, up in the air. All right. Thanks for watching, everybody. Until next time, Sunset Center signing out.
Peace.
We say things that don't mean
subscribe.
Anything. But thanks for listening.